5. Unknown Injury. On most mornings during the summer of 2001, Mandy Lindeberg tried to rise early to beat ExxonMobil's biologists onto the beaches. She slept aboard the Kittiwake 2, a 72-foot converted wooden tug that she and a small team of researchers had chartered on behalf of her employer, the United States government, and in particular, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, which monitored the world's oceans and weather. Her goal that summer was to survey 91 beach segments in the Prince William Sound. Under the design of Lindeberg's study, she and her team would dig at least 7,000 holes. Each day, they shoveled away rocks and sediment on the beaches to a depth of 50 centimeters and then examined the pits for evidence of oil, perhaps left over from the Exxon Valdez spill 12 years earlier, or perhaps from some other source. When they found some, they scooped samples into jars. As she moved from place to place, Lindeberg could often see scientists contracted by ExxonMobil following her in the Spirit of Glacier Bay, a 170-foot cruise ship with 30 staterooms. She and her fellow government scientists consulted a website about the cruise ship's luxury features, which they mocked among themselves. An air of rivalry tinted with class and cultural warfare took hold as the summer progressed. Lindeberg could not tell exactly what the ExxonMobil scientists were doing, but they seemed to be monitoring the extent of her pit digging on the beaches. They also dug some of their own holes on the same stretches where she worked. David Janka, a long-haired banjo player and charter captain who worked on related oil research projects with Lindeberg's team, would peer from the bridge of his motor vessel at the trailing corporate scientists. The Biostitutes, he called them. At least once, the ExxonMobil team hired a helicopter to track the movements of the government scientists, Lindeberg recalled. At times, the ExxonMobil scientists would complain that Lindeberg had used up all of the good sampling spots on a particular beach. Lindeberg thought to herself, "You were having Eggs Benedict. We were having our gruel and going to the beach first. That's not my problem." But she tried to be diplomatic. "My crew arrived here early this morning," she told them. "You're welcome to sample here as soon as we are done." She was an informal, stout, brown-haired woman in her late 30s who had grown up in the Puget Sound area of the state of Washington. She had studied marine biology in college and then moved to Alaska to work on the marine and wildlife injury assessments after the Exxon Valdez spill. In 1996, she took a position at the National Marine Fisheries Service of NOAA. Most of the year, Lindeberg worked in the state capital of Juneau at the agency's Auk Bay Laboratories, which included a dilapidated campus of docks, labs, warehouses, and trailers located just off the Glacier Highway. The lab stood on a slope that afforded a spectacular view of Lynn Canal, a part of Alaska's Inside Passage, which contains fjords teeming with whales, sea lions, and bald eagles. The dress code at Auk Bay was casual. On those rare summer days when the sun shined, the scientists might turn up in shorts and Hawaiian shirts and leave their dogs tied up outside their trailer doors. Almost all of the biologists, chemists, and toxicologists at Auk Bay were, like Lindeberg, long-settled refugees from the lower 48. Alaska attracted them because of its abundance of understudied natural life. The state also seemed to appeal to personalities with an ornery or independent streak, and the Auk Bay group was no exception. After the Exxon Valdez spill, the laboratory had become a center for research about the effects of spilled oil on the natural environment. The Auk Bay team increasingly had to cope with the bands of academic scientists from back east who turned up in Alaska with lucrative contracts from the oil corporation. Initially, ExxonMobil funded 40 or 50 researchers to travel to Alaska each summer to work on the subjects that NOAA's smaller network of government-funded scientists also explored. By the summer of 2001, the corporate-funded researchers numbered about a dozen. By processes that remained mysterious to the Auk Bay team, but which they chalked up to the ways of a world fueled by money, the studies published with Oil Corporation funding never seemed to damage ExxonMobil's legal position that Prince William Sound had fully recovered from the Exxon Valdez spill. The corporation's studies sometimes produced similar data to those from the government teams, but the ExxonMobil scientists usually reached different conclusions about what the data implied. Still, the Auk Bay team had never experienced anything quite like what unfolded after Mandy Litterberg started digging her 7,000 holes. 12 years after the accident, the Prince William Sound's rocky beaches looked unsoiled. The initial cleanup undertaken by Exxon in the summers of 1989 and 1990 was almost universally judged a success. But was the oil really gone? Had the fish and wildlife in the area fully recovered? The answers could have legal and financial implications. The original approximately $1 billion settlement among Exxon, the federal government, and the state of Alaska, reached in 1991, contained a reopener for unknown injury clause that allowed the two government parties to seek up to an additional $100 million from ExxonMobil if they could prove environmental damage that was unforeseeable at the time of the settlement. There had been signs that oil remained in pockets underneath some of the beaches. Lindbergh's hole digging might provide evidence to support such a reopener claim. Her summer study was the latest in a series of attempts by NOAA's Auk Bay team of biologists and toxicologists to document spilled oil's lingering and less visible impacts. That research involved broader, fundamental questions about the sources of oil's harmful effects on natural environments. In the long run, ExxonMobil and the entire oil industry had an economic interest in those findings, too. The battle between ExxonMobil and NOAA over Mandy Lindbergh's 7,000 holes illuminated a larger, recurring aspect of the corporation's influence over American public life. Whether the subject was the damage caused by oil and gasoline spills, climate change, the safety of chemicals ExxonMobil manufactured, or other critical matters involving public health and the environment, the corporation joined directly in scientific controversies to protect its interests and advance its arguments. It contracted with academic scientists to conduct studies about subjects that had an impact on its business model, and it brought staff scientists out of ExxonMobil laboratories to lobby Congress and regulatory agencies. ExxonMobil's science bore all the hallmarks of the corporation's worldwide strategy. It was aggressive, well-funded, carried out by highly competent individuals, unrelenting in its focus on core business issues, and influenced by the litigation strategies of lawyers with attack dog mindsets. Even the corporation's most ardent opponents conceded that the individual ExxonMobil staff scientists they encountered were typically ethical and professional. The question that nagged those on the receiving end of ExxonMobil's blended campaigns of research, lawsuits, and political lobbying was whether the corporation's science could be considered honest.